Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastoma Vidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 25. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2933. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of the creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Footnote 11. Srila Prabhupada comments. We should note very carefully that the personality of Godhead is addressing Lord Brahma, and specifically with great emphasis himself, pointing out that it is he, the personality of Godhead, who existed before creation. It is only he who maintains the creation, and it is he only who remains after the annihilation of the creation. Brahma is also a creation of the Supreme Lord. The impersonalists put forth the theory of oneness in the sense that Brahma, also being the same principle of I, because he is the emanation from the I. The absolute truth is identical with the Lord. The principle of I, and that there is nothing more than the principle of I, is explained in this verse. Accepting the argument of impersonalists, it is to be admitted that the Lord is the creator I, and that Brahma is the created I. Therefore, there's no difference between the two I's. Namely, the predominator I and the predominated I. Therefore, there are still two I's, even accepting the argument of the impersonalists. Right? Because they're trying to put the emphasis on the part of I, because then they become the Lord. But the point is, you still be that I, because it's Krishna who's the creation. He's himself, he's his energies, he's everything. So they're all him. But there's still a difference between predominator I and predominated I. That's always going to come down. That's what they're trying to get rid of, but then it's very obvious. Why is it he's the one doing it, and then we're one with him? Why aren't we doing it? Otherwise, then we'd be the same, but we're not, right? We're letting him do all the work and then trying to take the credit, right? But we must note carefully that these two I's are accepted in the Vedic literature, Katha Upanishad, in the sense of quality, right? Because there's a difference, but then there's the sameness in the quality. That has to be also appreciated. Katha Upanishad says, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidathati Kaman. The creator I and the created I are both accepted in the Vedas as qualitatively one, because both of them are Nityas and Chaitanas. But the singular I is the creator I, and the created I's are a plural number because there are many I's. Like Brahma and those generated by Brahma. It is the simple truth. The father creates or begets a son, and the son also creates many other sons. And all of them may be one as human beings, but at the same time, from the father, the son, and grandsons are all different. The son cannot take the place of the father, nor can the grandsons. Simultaneously, the father, the son, and the grandson are one and different also. The human beings, they are one, but as relativities, they are different. Therefore, the relativities of the creator and the created, or the predominated have been differentiated in the Vedas by saying that the predominator I is the feeder of the predominated I's. And thus, there is a vast difference between the two principles of I. Right, so if you're going to make things relative and compare, then yes, that's where you see the difference. But if we're not doing the relativity aspect, means the quality aspect, then there's the sameness. Right? Because the difficulty comes is that the impersonalists and that, they're still maintaining this false ego. And because of that, that's why they're coming up with it, they're making this mistake. But if they give up the false ego and see with proper ego, then there won't be any mistake.
So we're talking here about the world and the jivas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Maharaj, what is understood by relativities? As human beings, they are one, but as relativities, they are one. So there's a comparison in the hierarchy.
Means relative means something's relative to another. You know, is this pot good or not? You know, is the pot good or the garland good? You know? So then, if you're going to drink water, then the pot's better. If you want to, put it around the deity's neck, then you'll use the flower garland. So you can tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the point is that the oneness is there in qualities, but in function, then there's the difference.
Thank you.
We say that impersonalists, they still have their false ego.
Yes.
That's their main problem.
Yes.
Theoretically, we do accept Krishna, but we maintain our ego.
Yes, but we know what the proper ego is.
Okay.
Even though we may not function on it, we know what it is. So if you bring it up, you know it's right.
Yes.
But we may at the initial point, we may, you know, push our particular point more. But as we get purified, then because we know the goal, we move towards that goal. But if we don't know, we get purified. Then getting purified, then we'll get into all kinds of altruistic and what's the other?
Philanthropic.
Philanthropic and altruistic activities. Because now you're nice and you care about others, and so now you'll do all these nice and good things, and you won't actually move forward to understand beyond that. You'll only get that far. So that they're considering others and trying to do good work, that's nice. But to be able to appreciate the soul and the relationship, the Lord in that relationship, that's then they won't get to. So you always have to know what that further knowledge is. Just like even on, we hear about prema, we hear about certain aspects of it. We don't get into too much detail because the point is that that level is about tasting, so detail brings out the taste. And since we're not getting necessarily much of a taste from it, there's no need of so much detail. Right? Because Vardhi is more detail than you'll get something, because that's how we get things on the secondary platform. The more the detail, the better the quality of the result. But since prema is an experience, not a result as such, you know, meaning physical result, therefore, then this concept of more detail will bring me to a higher platform, right? So the more I know about the details in Krishna, you know, like that. It's nice because we're remembering Krishna, but we can't say it's that platform. But anything to that we remember Krishna and engage in Krishna's service, that's perfect. Does that make sense? But to function on the platform of, I mean, with the idea that because I know more detail, that makes me more spiritually advanced, that has nothing to do with it. Right? Does that make sense? Now, because I'm committed to Krishna, I want to know more, so I learn more, then that's from the consciousness. But just the idea that more facts means more knowledge, means more advancement, that's a material concept. It's not spiritual. So, yeah.
When they say that one is the predominator and the predominant, so the Mayavadis, do they have the concept that Brahman is also one of the Jivas, and that particular Jiva is being designated so as Brahman, and that's the reason why they want to?
I wouldn't have a clue how far they take different things. But in the Brahma Parinamavad, then they're just going to say there's only Brahman. Maybe in later ones, then they'll get into stuff like that. But because they're not the ones that talk about the Brahman as Jiva. You know, that's other groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And another feature of this verse, no one can deny the personalities of both the Lord and Brahma. Therefore, in the ultimate issue, both the predominator and predominated are persons. This conclusion refutes the conclusion of the impersonalist that in the ultimate sense everything is impersonal. This impersonal feature, stressed by the less intelligent impersonalist school, is refuted by pointing out that the predominator I is the absolute truth and that he is a person. The predominated I, Brahma, is also a person, but he is not the absolute. For realization of oneself in spiritual psychology, it may be convenient to assume oneself to be the same principle as the absolute. But there is always the difference of the predominated and the predominator, as clearly pointed out here in this verse, which is grossly misused by the impersonalists. Brahma is factually seen, because they're thinking they're being so subtle, but on the platform of the Lord, it's very gross, because right? They're not even getting the facts right. Brahma is factually seeing face to face his predominator Lord, who exists in his transcendental eternal form, even after the annihilation of the material creation. The form of the Lord, as seen by Brahma, existed before the creation of Brahma, and the material manifestation with all the ingredients and agents of material creation are also energetic expansions of the Lord. And after the exhibition of the Lord's energy comes to a close, what remains is the same personality of Godhead. Therefore, the form of the Lord exists in all circumstances of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. The Vedic hymns confirm the fact in the statement, Vasudevo va idam agra asit na brahma na cha Shankara eko narayana asin na brahma neshana. Etc. Before the creation, there was none except Vasudeva. There was neither Brahma nor Shankara. Only Narayana was there and no one else. Neither Brahma nor Ishana. I guess in this it would be either, I think, Lord Shiva. Sri Padshankaracharya also confirms this in his comments in the Bhagavad Gita that Narayana, or the personality of Godhead, is transcendental to all creation, but that the whole creation is the product of avyakta. Therefore, the difference between the created and the creator is always there, although both the creator and created are of the same quality. The other feature of the statement is that the supreme truth is Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead and his kingdom have always been explained. The kingdom of Godhead is not void as conceived by the impersonalists. The Vaikuntha planets are full of transcendental variegatedness, including the four-handed residence of those planets, with great opulence of wealth and prosperity. And there are even airplanes and other amenities required for high-grade personalities. Therefore, the personality of Godhead exists before the creation. And he exists with all transcendental variegatedness in the Vaikuntha Loka. So it's not just that he's there. He's there as Bhagavan. Right? Because as in here that he's there before, then from that platform he's Paramatma. Right? He's there before. Then he creates everything. He maintains it, enters it. Then he winds it all back up into himself. So that's all happening as Paramatma. Right? So, but it's pointed out, Kurt Prabhupada's pointing out that the soul and the Lord have similar qualities, but there's not, that the quantities are not the same. So Krishna is a predominator, we're the predominated. Then, but besides that, having established that, he's Bhagavan. So beyond that, he is the Supreme Lord who is associated with his devotees in his own place, in his own pastimes.
The impersonalists, they speak about Brahma, but they don't accept the Brahma Samhita. The prayers of Brahma.
No. I mean, many can't understand the Brahma Samhita. I even once was showing it dealing with one, I think it was a Madhwa pundit. He was the pundit for the particular mat. I don't remember which it was. Yeah, I don't remember the names anymore. But I wanted him to chant, because they have a style where they chant. It's called Gamaka, where it's like singing, but it doesn't have the beat and everything like that. So you'd hear him do it. You'd hear Subramanya Swami do it, because he learned from him. He's his teacher. And so, now and again you hear, not as much now. Previously you heard more, because you really have to know the music to be able to do that. So then, but the verses, he would chant the verses, but he said that he felt that there was something wrong in the Sanskrit itself. Because why is it saying Krishna is the supreme and not Vishnu, and like, things like that. So they it's just, Brahma Samhita won't be, really understood by anybody. So that's why Lord Chaitanya revealed it. Otherwise it was something more broad. Maybe one of the other acharyas would have brought it out. So, therefore, the personality of Godhead exists before the creation, and he exists with all transcendental variegatedness in the Vaikuntha Lokas. The Vaikuntha Lokas, also accepted in the Bhagavad Gita as being of the Sanatana nature, are not annihilated even after the annihilation of the manifested cosmos. Those transcendental airplanes are of a different nature altogether, and that nature is not subjected to the rules and regulations of material creation, maintenance, and annihilation. The existence of the personality of Godhead implies the existence of the Vaikuntha Lokas, as the existence of a king implies the existence of a kingdom. Right, that's the point. As a person, then, as Bhagavan, the one who has all opulences, then there's always going to be the place in which they are, manifest. Yeah. The impersonalist adduces no activity in the Supreme. But in this discussion between Brahma and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord is said to have activities also, as he has his form and quality. With the activities of Brahma and other demigods during the maintenance of the creation are to be understood as the activities of the Lord. The king or the head executive of a state may not be seen in the government offices, for he may be engaged in royal comforts. Yet it should be understood that everything is being done under his direction, and everything is at his command. Right? So all this is going on by his command. He may not be taking part, but it's his potencies. And then individual souls, then they take part in the process. The personality of Godhead is never formless. In the material world, he may not be visible in his personal form to the less intelligent class of men. And therefore, he may sometimes be called formless. But actually, he is always in his eternal form in his Vaikuntha planets, as well as other planets of the universe, as different incarnations. The example of the sun is very appropriate in this connection. The sun in the night may not be visible to the eyes of men in the darkness, but the sun is visible wherever it has risen. That the sun is not visible to the eyes of the inhabitants of a particular part of the earth does not mean that the sun has no form. In some of the Vedas, it is also said that in the beginning only the impersonal Brahman existed. However, according to this verse, the impersonal Brahman, which is the glowing effulgence of the body of the Supreme Lord, may be called the immediate cause, but the cause of all causes, or the remote cause, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So you have remote cause, immediate cause. Because sometimes when we're talking cause and effect, and we want to have, see the detail, but at the same time connect the Lord, so that's the immediate cause, and then he's the remote cause. So you have the effect, you have the immediate cause, and then you have the remote cause. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so he may be called the immediate cause, but the cause of all causes, or the remote cause, is the Supreme Personality, Godhead. The Lord's impersonal feature is existent in the material world because by material eyes or material... Because by material senses... Wow. That's amazing. I've said material eyes, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then I went to read the next one and it says material eyes. Wow. I don't even see that far, but I'm reading that. Well, that's weird. And because by material senses or material eyes, the Lord cannot be perceived. One has to spiritualize the senses before one can expect to see or perceive the Supreme Lord. But he is always engaged in his personal capacity. And he is eternally visible to the inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka, eye to eye. Because they have that spiritual qualification. The Lord then is always visible to them. But those who are materialists, then they can't see with the material senses. Right? Because material sense means when you look at something, you're not seeing Krishna. That's a material sense. You look at the thing and you want to see if there's an option for sense gratification or not. Right? And so but spiritual senses means when you see the Lord. That's what Prabhupada says. The pure devotee, he doesn't exactly see how everybody else sees. Right? Everybody else, when they see, they just see the material energy. And that's all. But the pure devotee sees that the energy that he's looking at, not that he can't see the object, but that it's part of the Lord. And it's his energy and what is the connection with the Lord, how to engage it in the Lord's service. So they see that. So they don't exactly see the way everybody else does. So material senses means you only see the Lord. So if you're seeing the Lord in everything, then that's the spiritual senses. It may be through the medium of the external senses, but that doesn't matter. Right? Just like Krishna gets everything done through the demigods. Right? But he's unaffected. So in the same way is that the devotee, things are being done through the material senses, but it doesn't mean that he's affected by them. Because he doesn't perceive it as material. Does this make sense? Therefore, he is materially impersonal, just as the executive head of the state may be impersonal in the government offices, although he is not impersonal in the government house. Similarly, the Lord is not impersonal in his abode, which is always nirasta kuhakam, as stated in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. Therefore, both the impersonal and personal features of the Lord are acceptable, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures, right? So they're both acceptable. When we're talking about the material world and creation, that's going to be the impersonal feature. And that's controlled by him and his Paramatma feature. But our interest as devotees, we're devotees of Krishna as Bhagavan. The other two features are part of him. Right? He's the support for them. So we don't have a problem talking about him, but we will generally be talking about Krishna and his pastimes with his devotees as Bhagavan. You know what makes sense? But if it comes up in the discussion, like we see in the Bhagavatam, and like what Prabhupada is discussing here, then we have no problem discussing it. We don't have a problem with the oneness, because we know that the difference is there. It's one and different simultaneously. So those that's only different or only one, then there's going to be some problems. Especially if it's only one. Yes?
It appears that the living entity also has personal and impersonal feature. Of course, we don't have the Paramatma feature, but although we're persons, sometimes we deal personally and impersonally.
No, but we're even, Prabhupada in a letter pointed out, even our impersonal dealings is because we're a person. Because if you're, let us just say, if someone's dealing impersonally,
yes,
what is he absorbed in?
Himself.
So the person. It's just that he's not accommodating other persons in his personal dealings.
Okay.
You understand? Yeah. So we take it impersonal, just goes into this void. No. It's because he's considering himself or his own needs or his own extended needs or, you know, you know, himself, his senses, his family, his community, his nation, you know, whatever, how far you want to take it, you know, it's the age of Aquarius, or, you know, whatever it is, you know. So he'll take it however far, and then, but not see others, that they're individuals, and they have their, they just see them as opportunities to get done what they want to get done. So the impersonal means you're dealing with someone else as just energies, and not seeing them as a person, but you yourself are always seeing yourself as a person. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise we'll just say it's impersonal. No. And what are we doing? We're not considering them as a person. So it's not any different. That's why this whole judgment, like Kwai Krishna says, this judgment of right and wrong, it is not actually that beneficial. Only when you see things in connection with, does it please Krishna or not, is it beneficial for moving forward in Krishna consciousness. So in here we can say, it's not beneficial, but why not? Because people aren't remembering Krishna, and therefore they're not remembering that the part and parcels, the jivas, are all parts of Krishna. And that Krishna's super soul is within their heart. That's what's missing. But this point of people dealing nicely or not nicely, or being self-centered or not, that's still just all mundane. And even your nice mundane, it's still mundane. You'll stay in the material world. You won't get out of the material world. The nicest guy in the material world still is going to be here. Right? Not that he'll be nice next time, because his, you know, his pious credit for being nice may have run out. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah. Does that make sense? So that's why the approach is not from this moralistic principle. It means moralism is understood, so you understand the mechanics. But you can't take moralism as a standard, especially when you want to measure things in devotional service. Moralism can't be the principle. Because we're taking right and wrong, and moralism is based on the mechanical effects you'll get. In other words, artha. That's where you consider it. Because generally, most of the time, we're not considering in dharma. Like, what is your relationship with them and them with you, and how is the etiquette supposed to go on? Are we considering that? No, we're just going, my feelings, I felt left out, and I didn't think he was dealing in a, you know, a nice way, and like that. So it's just our feelings. It has nothing to do with the religious process. I may, to support my argument, say, well, he's in this position, so he should take care. You know, they're supposed to protect the people, and this is how I say protection goes on, rather than what it should. You know what I'm saying? So we may use it to support our argument, but actually we don't care about it. You know, just like the Shankyites may use Buddhism to support their argument, but not that they care about Buddhism. They care about their argument.
Yeah.
You know? So many times devotees will use, like, you're not the body. That's one of the famous ones. You know, it's just, we'll use it for anything. You know? Oh, you know, I'm so tired. You're not this body, Prabhu. You know, just do it, you know. I'm so tired. You're not this body, like that. And like, wow, I'm so hungry. You're not this body. You know, it's just whatever it is to get something done, we're not the body, which is true. But we also have to see how it's connected to the service and all that and make sure that's understood. Because otherwise we just connect it to the mechanics, to the efficiency. And then if it's all about efficiency, if it's about Krishna, then fine, it's going on. But if we don't focus on Krishna, then we may forget about Krishna, but the efficiency will remain. You know what I'm saying? Leadership has trained us to be efficient, but if it hasn't trained us in Krishna consciousness, then we will be efficient, but not Krishna conscious. So that's why it always has to be seen in connection with Krishna consciousness. So this idea that things are good and bad based on the material principle is not actually a very important platform to look at things from. In other words, you won't advance really by it. You can say, oh, but it'll be so much better, and materially it'll be better in the community and that. Yeah, maybe the community will be a little nicer, but it doesn't mean that they'll be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing.
Is it recommended for devotees to be in person in a devotee community? Not with all, but with few.
Because no, but why? No, see, but my question comes up is, since we just explained this for 10 minutes, what is this question you're asking? How is it different than what has been here? There was there being impersonal, and we explained why it's not so nice. And now you're asking, is it okay to be impersonal?
Because it is very progressive in the non-devotee community to be impersonal.
It's very progressive in the non-devotee community. But didn't we just explain that? It's about their efficiency. Didn't we? Wasn't that discussed? So then my point is manana means you'll take that, contemplate it. There has to be, it shouldn't just come up and bounce off our, what do you call it? The impressions. Right? Because otherwise, we just look in the memory, there's an impression, and just it bounces off that. You have to take it through the reasoning process. You know, then, okay, so how do these two apply? So if we're not supposed to be impersonal, then the devotees are impersonal in the community because they say it's good to be professional. Like that. So then that would mean that, so it's just there for efficiency, but if we're not Krishna conscious in this efficiency, then all we've gained is the efficiency, as the acharyas mentioned, that one puts in that effort, the only benefit one will get is the effort itself, because otherwise for the soul you'll get nothing. So you go through all this, and you see, okay, it's not good. Now, if you now, okay, but devotees are attached to that, they say it is, and all this, and then you try to analyze it to the point where it's something new, not just the I said the words of what we're hearing bouncing off of our impressions. Does that make sense?
Because a balance of being impersonal and personal is very, one can advance in Krishna consciousness.
One can advance in Krishna consciousness if there's a balance between personal and impersonal. Where's the impersonal that we advance nicely? Where is it? We're talking about our advancement, not in getting money or cutting a profile. So where is it? Means we use the words nice.
In keeping the negative elements away from us.
In keeping the negative elements away from us. And what are negative elements?
The devotees, non-devotees.
The devotees and non-devotees. So why would the devotees be impersonal elements?
Because of their enviousness and jealousy towards us.
Their enviousness and jealousy towards us. But is that being impersonal or that's being personal?
They are personal, but we can be impersonal so that...
But what does that mean by being impersonal?
And not having a relationship with such elements so that we don't...
But why is not having a relationship considered impersonal? Because we're specifically as a person, not dealing with them as a person. So how is that impersonal? You can say we cannot interact, we don't associate, but that's what Rupa Goswami says. You know? You understand? Because we take it impersonal means, lacking etiquette and culture.
Lacking etiquette and culture? This is the definition of...
That's how you're using it. I'll stay away from them. I won't interact with them because they're envious, so I don't interact, and that's called impersonal. How is that impersonal? You as a person are not interacting with them as a person. Impersonal means, the people in Bombay. That's impersonal. But your dealings are always going to be personal. Okay, thank you.
Maharaj, it seems that the difficulty is to spiritualize our vision.
Yes, spiritualize the vision, yes.
And this is... we are not used to that, you know?
Not used to that, so yes. Well, that's why you have the point being, regularly coming up about immaturity.
Yes.
That someone will be looking, and like Maharaj Rahugana, the points he makes are technically quite correct according to Shastra and different dealings and so many things. And to be able to accommodate all that means he's, you know, quite qualified on certain levels. But then the problem comes as Jarabharat points out, he's immature. Because he only sees the material. We take it that maturity means we're very good in the detail of the material. And if you're talking about the secondary, yes, that means some maturity. But for the soul, for talking spiritual life, maturity means maturity in spiritual vision, as you're saying. So we'll take it that, of course, that's what it is, but we have to work on the detail. No, we have to work on the spiritual vision. Because if it's for Krishna, we see it that way, then that's where the detail has meaning, where you can extend the detail, and it won't sidetrack us from Krishna consciousness. But if we don't take that approach, then our dealing with detail, then the problem comes up is that it... you're expanding detail without the principle that it's connected to. So that just means you're expanding the external.
Yes.
That's why Krishna is so kind that as long as at the end the results for Krishna, it's spiritual.
Yes.
So that in that way, devotees advance,
yes,
despite the immaturity in their,
yes,
spiritual consciousness. Because the ultimate they will give to Krishna. But what's being recommended as we move forward where we start to be able to see things as spiritual in the whole process, right? At the beginning, the middle, and the end. It just means there's more experience because you're always thinking of Krishna because that's what it always means. Then we're, that absorption or advancement in Krishna consciousness, our surrender to Krishna will be greater. So that's the things we have to see, that the vision is more important. The knowledge is there to bring about the vision. But we take it, oh, okay, all this is all theory, but it's okay if it's going to be get things practically done. So if I have volume of knowledge based on seeing things in a Krishna conscious way, I'll consider that, you know, just too much information. But if it's information on how to practically get something done, then that's we want. We want that details and all that. But what we're missing here is that if we are not Krishna conscious in this while this is going on, then unless that results gets offered to Krishna, then we'll say it will be, but you know when? Yeah. So that's the whole point is that one has to keep this, then the details will come up. You see, Prabhupada focused on the quality of consciousness. And then, as the devotees matured, then they started to do amazing things. You know, it's like when he's sitting there at 26 Second Avenue, there weren't that many amazing things going on. Right? I mean, amazing in that you had, you know, people off the street, these hippies and all that, and coming to Krishna consciousness at the same time, those who were a bit more respectable, you know, like Satsarup Maharaj, he was a teacher, you know, the Brahmananda was a teacher, I think Satsarup was a teacher, but he also he was a social worker. You know, all these things is that they were, you know, you could see the range that people like this that would have nothing to do with each other are all working together. And that's the amazing thing if you see with the spiritual vision, but from the external, there is not. But now you give it time, and then you start coming into, you know, the late 60s, early 70s. Now you start to see some amazing stuff start to happen. The temples and the Sankirtan and all this. And then when you got into mid-70s, you know, it's like the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, 11 volumes of books. Then in 18 months was translated, transcribed, edited, laid out, and printed. Now that is amazing. And then the devotees, the artwork they did, all that, the art department did all the art for that. You know? And everything happened all in 18 months. So that's amazing. That the skill there this material skill there that was being used for Krishna, and they were using it just because it is for Krishna, so it had that spiritual aspect. There was no material, technically. You know what I'm saying? Technically they're using it, but actually there's not. So, by consciousness, then the detail is there. That's reality. But to think by improving the detail, that will improve the consciousness, what has that got to do with the price of tea in China? It has nothing to do with anything. You know, apples and oranges, or, you know, whatever is the local saying that means one thing, one topic has zero to do with the other. But we're taking it the null do, because this is what's going on in the world. And why would we care about that? Because of social prestige. That was the one thing before. They didn't care about social prestige in the 60s and 70s. Right? And so now, introducing that, which means the mode, a false ego and the mode of passion, then one becomes covered. One can't see actual knowledge. One can't see the actual position. You know, or it gets covered by, you know, desire for sense gratification or whatever. Just, that's the problem. Before it was, sense gratification was there, you knew it was wrong, but, you know, it would come up, you could talk about it. But now we're trying to say it's fabulous. It's important. And that was the problem before, things were too austere. It's like, yeah, going 9-to-5 job, you know, 5 days a week for the next 50 years, that's not austere. You know what I'm saying? We're not even talking commuting. We're not, you know, none of this stuff. So, you know, what's not austere about material life? You know what I'm saying? So we're attacking the very foundation of the lifestyle in goodness that Prabhupada gave. He actually gave us a lifestyle in pure goodness, but it can be translated into goodness. As you can see, the lifestyle that Krishna gave, the lifestyle of the Paramahamsa, that's what Prabhupada gave us. But he gave it in the context that we as sadhakas can see it in the external form. Like that. And so, it is a perfect, complete lifestyle. He's given everything. But then we'll think, no, all these other things have to be there. But that's only for prestige. Right? Right? The person says, you guys follow Varnashram? Yes. Oh, so then then they would say all bad things about it. And then the devotee feels embarrassed. So what's the solution? We should not talk about Varnashram. So then people won't embarrass me because I don't know anything about it. So therefore when they bring it up, I have nothing to say, no retort. And that's bad. And I can't tolerate that. And so therefore we should remove Varnashram from our society. Why not learn the philosophy? Why not learn the culture? Right? You know, then we do it. So then our view can mature. Like that. So your point is very, very good. Right? It's that we take the detail to be the main. No, the detail is to invoke the main. Because you have two methods. One is that of the spontaneous, means you hear about Krishna, immediately you're attracted. And you're just engaged in devotional service because you want to please Krishna. So if that doesn't happen, then the other is Vaidhi Bhakti. Is that you use the other, is that you focus on those externals in connection with Krishna. You always are talking about Krishna, but you bring up those others that in the spontaneous wouldn't need to be emphasized. You know, it's just like if someone's doing something wrong, others aren't doing it wrong. Right? You have to emphasize that point just to bring it out so they develop the proper habit. But once the habit is there, you shouldn't emphasize it anymore. But now if we take it that emphasis, that's the important thing, and now we overemphasize the details, then we've missed the whole point of that's being given. So, therefore, both the impersonal and personal features of the Lord are acceptable, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. This personality of Godhead is very emphatically explained in the Bhagavad Gita in connection with the verse Brahmano hi pratishtaham, Bhagavad Gita 14:27. Yes. Therefore, in all ways, the confidential part of spiritual knowledge is realization of the personality of Godhead, and not his impersonal Brahman feature. Right? Means if you realize the person, the impersonal comes along with it. So, yeah. One should therefore have his ultimate aim of realization not in the impersonal feature, but in the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. The example of the sky within the pot and the sky outside the pot may be helpful to the student for his realization of the all-pervading quality of the cosmic consciousness of the Absolute Truth. But that does not mean that the individual part and parcel of the Lord becomes the supreme by a false claim. Right? It means the example is given, and it's a correct example to understand the greatness of Krishna. But the point is you have to understand when you break the pot, that little bit of sky in the pot doesn't now become the whole sky. It's still just that much sky. Right? Something, something? Yeah. It means only that the conditioned soul is a victim of the illusory energy in her last snare. To claim to be one with the cosmic consciousness of the Lord is the last trap set by the illusory energy, or Daivi Maya. Even in the impersonal existence of the Lord, as it is in the material creation, one should aspire for personal realization of the Lord. And that is the beginning. That is the meaning of Paschadaham Yad Echchat Chayo Vashish Yeta Soshmyaham. Brahmaji also accepted the same truth when he was instructing Narad Muni. He said, So yam te bihitas tata bhagavan vishva bhavanaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.50. There is no other cause of all causes than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Therefore, this verse, aham, eva, never indicates anything other than the Supreme Lord. And one should therefore follow the path of the Brahma Sampradaya, or the path from Brahmaji to Narada to Vyas, etc., and make it a point in life to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, or Lord Krishna. This very confidential instruction to the pure devotees of the Lord was also given to Arjuna and to Brahma in the beginning of the creation. The demigods like Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshvara, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna are undoubtedly different forms of the Lord for execution of different functions. The different elemental ingredients of material creation, as well as the multifarious energies, also may be of the same personality of Godhead. But the root of all of them is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. One should be attached to the root of everything rather than bewildered by the branches and leaves. That is the instruction given in this verse. Right? All means it's all there as part of the tree, right? But it's the root that makes the tree, that's making the whole thing. So that means the manifestation you're seeing is the Lord. But you have to see it in context of the Lord. Maya means we see it separate than the Lord. We're seeing the Lord's creation, but we're seeing it separate from Him. That's why it's Maya. And when we see it in connection with Him, then we're not in illusion. Adhikarana 4. Fire is manifested. Tejo Adhikaranam. Sutra reference 2.3.9. Adhikarana Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarana, the Shankyites claim that air is the cause of fire and not Brahman. The Sutrakar resolves the apparently conflicting Sruti statements in Chandogya and Taittiriya Upanishads about the creation of fire. Fire is created from air, unquote, is a primary meeting, and, quote, every effect is also a creation of Brahman, end quote, is a secondary meaning, are in perfect harmony. Right? So there's no conflict between that from air you get fire at the same time as everything's coming from Brahman. There's no conflict. That's the problem. They can't reconcile these things. Right? Summary of Adhikarana 4, Vishaya. The Chandogya Upanishad 2.3.6.2.3 affirms Tat Tejo Siddhijata. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead created fire. In this way, it is explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead created fire. So the doubt, Shamshaya. However, the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.3 explains, Vayor Agnihi. From air, fire is manifested. And then there, explanation, Purva Paksha. These words explain that air created fire. Some may say that in this second quote, the word Vayo is in the ablative case, meaning after. This Shruti statement can mean, after creating air, Brahman created fire. And in this way, there is no contradiction between both elements. Were created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and fire was created after air was created. Siddhanta, consider that someone may say this. The sutrakar speaks as follows. Tejo tas tata hyaha. Teja, fire, ata, from that, tata, so, ye, he, indeed, aha, said. Fire comes from air because Shruti says this. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains, using the Sanskrit grammatical rules, how despite of considering the Shruti statement, from air fire is produced, as it is, doesn't oppose even the least the premise that Brahman creates everything. Sri Govindabhasya, Bhashya, Siddhanta. It is confirmed in the Shruti Shastra, which explains Vayor Agnihi, from air comes fire. The word Sambhuta is used here to indicate the meaning as, from air fire is created. Also, the primary meaning of the ablative case is form. If the primary meaning of a word makes sense, then the primary meaning should be accepted. So we're using the primary meaning, they'll not accept it, because it doesn't make sense to them. So they'll come up with some other meaning. But it's got to be that it makes sense in case of what's been previously explained, so why wouldn't it be used? The meaning after is secondary. In that circumstance, the secondary meaning should not be accepted. As will be explained later, the statement does not contradict the statement that everything is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So they're trying to just take it out of context. Is that, okay, he created this, then he created that, then he created... No, is this one's coming from this. Right? Because if everything comes from Brahman, then, okay, he created air. Then after that, he created fire, because they're using after. No, but they're saying from. So that means from air, then you get fire. But, so then they'll say, but it's not from Brahman. No, but the point is it doesn't contradict, because Brahman, everything's coming from there. So this energy is being manifest, then it's all coming from Brahman. So it's not a problem. So they can't accept both things. You know, it's like one group accepts that, okay, from air comes like this, but they don't accept Brahman does this. The other says Brahman does all this, but can't accept that, you know, it's going on here because it's all illusion. Does that make sense?
It's happening both the things at the same time.
Yes. The point is Krishna's creating through his energy, so he doesn't have to directly. So they're saying, well, he directly makes air, then directly makes fire. No, means he starts the process, and then his involvement is coming down through. They're taking it that he's coming in from the side. But he's not.
It's a lack of spiritual vision.
Yes, lack of spiritual vision. Now if you want to get the full spiritual vision, now you take this page and turn it over, and then see, here is the full vision, the light. I guess we would have to start with Bhagavatam.